This is the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the Wisconsin Writers Association, and always streaming at rightscast.net. The winner of this month's free first five pages critique is Jay Baker. Congratulations, Jay. You have won a critique of your manuscript's first five pages from yours truly. If you're listening to this program and you want to get in on future opportunities to have your first five pages critiqued, you can visit patreon.com/rightscast and become a contributor at $1, $2, or $3 per month or per episode, whichever works easier for you, and you'll be entered in these monthly drawings for a critique of your manuscript's first five pages. So congratulations once again to Jay. I'll be in touch soon about how we can get those first five pages in my hands for a critique. And everyone else, one more time, the place to visit to get in on next month's drawing is patreon.com/rightscast. This episode of Novel Approaches is brought to you in part by Kay Doherty's Hearts of Destiny. When an existential threat is posed to found family, wolf shifters, dragon shifters, vampires, and sorcerers will have to band together to take a stand against an evil that cuts to the very soul of who they are and whom they love. Hearts of Destiny is Matthias and Ian's story, and it's now available from 9 Star Press. For more, visit kdohertybooks.com or 9starpress.com. This is episode 25 of Novel Approaches here on the RightsCast Network. Welcome to the RightsCast Network's Novel Approaches podcast, a craft-focused conversation for writers everywhere.
Because writing novels is hard, and we're all in this together.
Hey there, I'm author, writing coach, and chronic podcaster R.R. Campbell.
And I'm Avery Ames, author, tea fanatic, and guest co-host of the Novel Approaches podcast.
In this installment of Novel Approaches, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the Wisconsin Writers Association, we'll be talking about retellings, what they are, what makes them enjoyable, and how we can make sure ours stand out from the crowd. But first, Avery, it's great to connect with you and in this capacity as a guest co-host. How are things going for you writing-wise?
They're going really well. I'm currently working on final revisions for a novel that I'm going to start querying in April, and I'm also drafting the sequel to my indie published debut novel. What's new with you?
Well, I'm happy to tell you what's new with me, but let's talk more about that indie published debut and how all of that is coming along, because I think I might have seen a few people clamoring for that sequel already. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, I believe it's pronounced Cambiare, right? Is how that's the first book in your series?
Yes. Awesome. It's a musical notation. That's why it's pronounced that way. It means change. It's a gothic fairy tale. It's got a lot of romance in it. If you like fairy tales, if you like kind of the old style gothic romance, it's a good thing for you to check out. But yeah, I'm currently working on that sequel. There's not a set date yet for the release, but it is currently in the drafting process.
It's in the drafting process. You know, that's a step in the right direction. We have to start somewhere. And it's good, too, to know that you're also in the position to be doing final revisions on something you'll start querying here shortly. In fact, by the time this episode airs, you might have already started down your path on a query road. So that is also, oddly enough, where I find myself right now, to your question earlier, is I am back on query road for that manuscript that takes place on the Cranberry Farm in northern Wisconsin. It's kind of I'm pitching it as Karen Thompson Walker's The Dreamers meets like Mohsin Hamid's Exit West kind of thing with some speculative twists thrown in there. So that's been, you know, as fun as querying is. I know people listening to this show know what that means, and Avery, you are in a similar position, surely. But querying aside, I'm actually also turning it back now to the idea of me as a chronic podcaster. By the time this episode airs, I will have started another new podcast, and this one will not be on the RightsCast Network. This one is called Just Me with R.R. Campbell. And though I do, of course, talk about writing at times during the episodes, this podcast is actually just about trying to live unscripted, unedited, and unafraid. And I just do 20-minute episodes. It's going to be a weekly thing, but I am dropping. It's actually, I said it's going to be 5 episodes in this first week. There will be 6 episodes coming in the first week because I cannot do math. And then by the time this episode debuts, I think there'll be about 8 episodes out. So that's something folks can check out by searching for Just Me with R.R. Campbell on YouTube, because there will be videos available for it as well. It's also going to be on Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. Hashtag podcast life. This is just who I have become. So that's what I've got going on in my end of the world. But, of course, we aren't here just to talk about our experiences querying. No, querying is not the topic for this episode. We are talking about retellings. And if you are new to the Novel Approaches program, dear listener, just know that the way this works is we hosted a few WritesCast chats on Instagram and on Twitter. We ask questions of the writing community about retellings, and then we take that feedback, we funnel it into this program, and yours truly and Avery here, we will respond to all of your input. And in that way, you get to be a part of the show just as much as we do here. So why don't we start here, Avery? We're talking about retellings. This was one of two possible topics for this episode that you pitched. What is a retelling?
Well, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a familiar story retold in a different way, such as updating the setting or altering the genders of the characters. Some of my personal favorites are Catherine M. Valente's Deathless, which is a retelling of the Russian folklore tale Koshchei the Deathless, and it's set amidst the Russian Revolution. Also, Anna Marie McLemore recently released Dark and Deepest Red, which is an absolutely gorgeous queer YA retelling of The Red Shoes by Hans Christian Andersen.
And what I really like that you're invoking here is not only this idea of retellings that are, as you mentioned at the top, maybe it's about altering the gender of the characters or updating the setting, but it also seems like there is some opportunities in the ones that you've mentioned to play with the period of time as part of that setting as well, which is, I think, really neat to consider. And on that point, we asked other folks, of course, in our WritesCast chat what their favorite retellings were, and we got some feedback here from MixMA at SkysongMA on Twitter, and MA had this to say: hasn't written any retellings herself, but she's always gaga over a Beauty and the Beast retelling, and she adds that she owns at least five of them. And so we can see that there are many different options out there for Beauty and the Beast retellings. And I will say, in my capacity as a RevPit editor, that a couple of years ago, I remember this as an entry. This is not one that I ultimately chose as my winner, but I was really mesmerized by this wonderful take on Beauty and the Beast that was done as an FF contemporary Beauty and the Beast. And I have to reach out to this author and see how it ended up going for them on Query Road, because I really did enjoy the story, and hopefully it has found a home. But Beauty and the Beast, of course, a great font to return to for retellings, it seems.
It is a very popular one, and I must admit, I have a bit of a weakness for Beauty and the Beast stories as well.
You know, it's a tale as old as time, as they say, do they not? We also had some feedback, of course, here, Avery, from Instagram, from author Sarah S. I don't know if you'd like to take it away with what Sarah had to contribute.
Yes, author Sarah S. said, "A Girl Like You is a brilliant rom-com twist on Pygmalion." They also loved a gender-swapped retelling of Pretty Woman and The Kiss Quotient. I adore literally every hate-to-love romance rom-com book because they're basically all variations or retellings of the OG hate-to-love romance Pride and Prejudice.
I thought that was a really great observation from Sarah. Sarah, of course, listeners, you might recognize from past contributions to WritesCast chats, but also to February's Novel Approaches episode when she joined me as a guest co-host. So bringing in the romance side of it here, talking about the OG hate-to-love romance Pride and Prejudice, I thought that was a really great observation. Gave me a good chuckle as well. And we had another contribution here from someone who is new to the WritesCast chat world. I love it when we can incorporate the feedback of someone who is new to our podcast network. And this is coming from A.A. McConnell, who tweets at MACCONNELL_A over on Twitter and says this: "The GBA games, which I believe is Game Boy Advance games, Golden Sun and Golden Sun The Lost Age, started as fan fiction ideas for them, but a friend and I made up so many new things that it became time to file the numbers off and make the rest our own." So, not necessarily a favorite retelling, but something that motivated a retelling that they are working on, and that came not from a tale as old as time, but in fact from a video game series, which I thought was really neat because that's something I hadn't considered before.
Yeah, to kind of go with something a little more modern and kind of take it and twist it.
And it's, you know, building off this idea of fan fiction as well, which I think is really cool. It was, well, we wrote this perhaps as something that might have been really, really close and was in the realm of fan fiction, and then, you know, relying on this idea of filing the numbers off and making it just enough your own that it can be a true retelling just outside that realm of fan fiction. So very cool. And thank you, A.A. McConnell, for that. And we had what I believe is just one more contribution to this question, and that came from Lee Hartman. And Avery, if you'd like to take it away with Lee's tweet, go ahead.
Yes, Lee tweets from Histfic Hartman on Twitter and says, I'm Lee. Right now I'm writing on a historical adventure series, but I want to do my own sci-fi fairy tale retelling series in the future. My favorite retellings are the Thornbeck Hagenheim series by Melanie Dickerson.
And I don't know, Avery, are you familiar by any chance with the Thornbeck and Hagenheim series? That one was new to me.
It was new to me as well, but I did put it on my TBR now.
Look at that. See, it's a great way to get recommendations for books. Just come hang out in the RightsCast chat. We always try to make one of the early questions about recommendations, and they always come up along the way. So thank you very much, Lee. Your first time visiting us during RightsCast chat as well, and we are very grateful for it. And we did have one other comment here about what it is that makes retellings so neat and so approachable coming from, we'll finish this section right where we started it with Mix MA at Skysong MA, who had this to say, I think retellings are great. They're a good storytelling aid. They offer a lot of interesting jumping off points and they make for a built-in hook. It's like you have a beat sheet available to you. It gives you plot arcs and points that you can alter or not as you choose. Same for the characters. It's kind of like, and she ties it back in here to something that was mentioned earlier, this idea of working with fanfic. And this was a new take on this for me as well, and I really was grateful for this opportunity to think about retellings as a storytelling tool, which is something that had not occurred to me previously. I don't know if, Avery, that stood out to you as an especially noteworthy comment?
Yeah, actually, that's one of the reasons that I kind of started with retellings a lot when I started taking my writing a little more seriously, because it does give you kind of a framework to build from, and then you can kind of twist and play with things. And so it's kind of a good way to get started, I think, if you're scared with building an entire world.
This episode is brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing. Dandelion Web Marketing is helping writers everywhere build that all-crucial, thriving author platform through strategic web marketing. If you're not sure if you're on the right track with your website, you can get one of their author website audits and find out. Listeners to the RightsCast Network can, right now, receive 50% off one of these audits, which is going to look at your content, security, design, search engine optimization, and more. Not only that, but Dandelion Web Marketing's author website audits will provide you with insight on what you might do to better connect with your audience. So to learn the strengths and weaknesses of your current website and save 50% along the way, you can visit dandelionwebmarketing.com/rightscast to learn more. That's dandelionwebmarketing.com/rightscast. Right. And on that point then, too, you're already talking about something that we're going to get into next in this discussion. And that's this idea of how do we keep our retellings fresh? You know, there have been some suggestions in the case of defining a retelling and what you can do to make something a retelling. But of course, we want to find ways to not make it so that it stands out as, well, okay, this literally is only just Beauty and the Beast. We want to find ways to make them stand out, or at least in theory, I would think anyway. So we asked, again, our friends over in our RightsCast chat on Twitter and Instagram, and another contribution here from MixMA on this one. We asked, how do we keep our retellings fresh? MA had this to say, make it gay, or trans, or race-bent, if any of these are in your lane, of course. Or you can make the villains the heroes, you can blend stories drawing on lesser known tales. The possibilities are endless, really, and MA also goes on to detail how you can have versions of the same story from different cultures. And I thought that was all really great, but what stood out to me most here, Avery, and let me know if you'd like to elaborate on this, of course, is this idea that if you are going to make it gay, if you're going to make it trans or race-bent, this idea of being in your lane, so to speak, you know, making sure that we're telling stories that we are equipped to tell and that aren't going to be putting us in a position to sort of be participating in something like literary colonization of another's experiences, for example. And that was just a really important point, and I was thankful that MA brought that up.
Yes, exactly.
And then, of course, we had some more feedback from A.A. McConnell here.
A.A. McConnell says, the wonderful thing is that this could be anything. You take whatever pieces from the original, allow them to be as obvious as you want, and do whatever you want. People who love retellings are often happy enough finding the bits you adhered to themselves.
So to me, what's standing out here is this idea that, you know, it is kind of fair to be, of course, invoking the original as much as we might like to do because, well, if people picked it up because you marketed it as a retelling of, say, Beauty and the Beast, they kind of want to find the bits that you adhere to, and it makes the experience for a reader more satisfying. We're fulfilling the promise that we made them in our marketing copy. And I don't know if, Avery, in your experience writing retellings, that's something that you have actively tried to pursue. And if you have, how have you kind of gone about that?
One thing I like to do is put in Easter eggs of kind of little known aspects of the original. As somebody who's really obsessed with fairy tales, I love putting in some of the things that like Disney may have left out, but that were in the original, and you kind of sneak those in as like almost an Easter egg or some sort of kind of almost a scavenger hunt for your readers.
I'm really happy that you mentioned this point of things that Disney might have left out, because I think when, at least for me anyway, as someone who is not fully immersed in the world of retellings and fairy tales, when I hear something like Beauty and the Beast, I immediately, the image in my mind is from the original animated film from Disney, say. And that might be the case for other folks who are out there listening to this. Are there any resources or places that you can recommend people try to dig up the other versions of these tales that get closer to the original source material so they can find what these things are Disney might have left out in their versions?
Honestly, most of them are public domain. So you can find them on Kobo, Amazon, anywhere you can find eBooks at the library. The collections are pretty predominant. There's the Grimm's collections. Hans Christian Andersen is one of the others. And then if you're interested, there's a couple of fairy tale, Russian fairy tale books that are listed by color, like the Blue Book. I cannot remember the name of the author off the top of my head, but we can put that in the show notes. But yeah, honestly, they're pretty easy to find since they are so old and they're public domain.
And that's really great to be mentioning all of those individuals here, too, because, of course, yes, if we are always thinking back to the Disney version, we're just kind of doing copies of copies. Whereas if we get to the original source material or something close to it in, say, a particular culture from which we want to draw the story that we're going to tell, well, the closer we get to the source, the more likely we are to be not doing a copy of a copy, but to just be doing a version of something that is already out there. And I think that that could certainly help keep it a little fresh. And on the point of freshness, we also had another contribution here from Angeline Boley. Angeline, folks might remember, was the co-host for the most recent episode of Novel Approaches prior to this one. And Angeline tweets at Fine Angeline, and Angeline had this to say. Retellings are a great opportunity to learn classic stories from other cultures. It's not a retelling if it's a story that's new to you. And I really appreciated the last sentence of that and thinking about it in terms of, well, you might be doing a retelling of something from Russian folklore, maybe from this Blue Book or whatever the case might be, and you might stumble upon it and realize, oh, this is fantastic. There are some really cool things that I could do to do a 21st century Middle America version of this that I think would have some appeal. And it's not going to be a retelling to your readers if they are not familiar with the source material. So that was a really great insight, I thought anyway, from Angeline there.
Yeah, like, for example, there's a fairly recent YA book called Wicked Fox by Kat Cho that came out, and it incorporates elements of Korean folklore that were new to me. So that was kind of my almost entry into those elements of folklore as well.
And what I like in that you're saying there is that it isn't just about the base story being the thing that is new to us. It could be, in fact, just Beauty and the Beast, but again, by adding in a different cultural flavor, as Kat has done here with whatever the story it was based on that she was writing about, you were then learning some new things, and this retelling was new to you from those specific angles. So there are really a number of different dimensions that we can explore this through.
Exactly.
And then next, though, it's probably worth talking about if there's anything that we should avoid in our retellings. And we did have a contribution again here from Sarah Smith over on Instagram. Avery, if you'd like to read Sarah's post, go for it.
Yes, Sarah made a very good point by saying to avoid any sort of bigoted, prejudiced, racist, sexist, etc. elements. Some books or stories that were popular long ago sometimes have offensive stereotypes, language, that sort of thing. So if you're going to retell an old story with some sort of problematic element in it, be sure to squash it and or correct it. Themes or tropes can be universal, but it's important to update them so they are respectful of minorities or marginalized groups that historically have been ignored or degraded.
And what I really liked here in Sarah's comment in the middle is that she mentions the ability to squash or correct for these problematic features that might have been in some of these older stories. And that is where this idea, I think, of being able to keep these stories fresh and bring our own insight to them really comes into play, right? We don't need to feel like, well, it was like that in the original story, because that feels like a cop-out to just continue to embrace what is now seen in our society as possibly problematic or harmful tropes or characters or other invocations. So, Sarah, I'm really happy that you mentioned it's not just about avoiding it. Maybe it's about finding a way to look at it and correct it in such a way that we can then demonstrate, all right, here's a contrast that's going to set our story apart, and it now makes the story appreciable to an audience that might have otherwise not been able to get invested in it.
Yeah.
And A.A. McConnell is back here. We have another contribution from A.A. to this question, talking about how deviating from the original is not a problem. It's when a retelling is so similar to the original that I wonder the point of it. I actually love when a story starts to read a lot like the original and then becomes a hugely different thing. Then again, I love what-if scenarios. And what is standing out to me here, Avery, and let me know if there's anything outside of this that stands out to you in this comment, is this idea that when we're doing a retelling, maybe it isn't about following the beat sheet every step of the way through the plot. We might, for example, take the premise for a particular fairy tale, what have you, and follow the first maybe 20% and then expand it into whatever it needs to be expanded thereafter. And we are still certainly invoking the elements of using a retelling, something that I had not considered prior to this comment from AA.
Yeah, I'll admit I'm kind of in the same boat as AA, that I tend to like the more they change, the ones that are a little closer to the source material, I don't resonate with as much as the ones that kind of do explore the what ifs and go beyond the original story.
And again, this is where we have an opportunity to say to ourselves, well, I really do like fairy tales, or I really do like a particular brand of folklore from a certain part of the world. I want to be able to tell these stories, but I also feel like there's so much that I could bring to them, and I want to tell my own stories too. And if you're a writer who's feeling torn about that, well, remember, this is and can be and will become your story. So take the liberties that you need to take to make it the best story that it needs to be for whatever it is that you are trying to say. That would be my thought anyway, as someone who is not traditionally in the retelling business, so to speak.
Yes.
And kind of building on this here, I wanted to get into a little bit more of a philosophical question. This one came to me pretty late in the crafting of our questions for our RightsCast chat, and it was one that I suspected we would get some differing opinions on, and it turns out we did. And that question is, are all stories retellings to some extent? And we had some feedback here from A.A. McConnell, as well as author Sarah S., and I will go ahead and kind of give you the broad brush strokes of what it is they had to say here. A.A. started by answering this question with, well, not by the way we define retelling. The saying is there are no original ideas under the sun, but that's only true if you pick everything apart to their most fundamental pieces. So that was AA's contribution. Whereas author Sarah Smith said, totally, as in totally, yes, all stories are retellings to some extent because I feel like, quote, there are no original ideas, just original ways to execute those ideas, with some follow-up here from Ann Amber Author on Instagram, who just added, agreed. So we had a little bit of a difference in opinion here. Avery, why don't you go ahead and read what we had from Mix MA, and then you and I can kind of break this down how we feel about it.
Yeah, MA's comment was, nah, that's oversimplifying. Retellings and tropes are tools, but they're not enhancements, not the main event.
The submission window is now open for the Wisconsin Writers Association's Jade Ring Contest. And the Wisconsin Writers Association, as a sponsor of this broadcast, wants you to know that they are looking for your fiction, for your nonfiction, and for your poetry for the chance to win the coveted Jade Ring, along with cash prizes and publication in Wisconsin People and Ideas Magazine and Creative Wisconsin Literary Journal. If you've got a short piece of fiction or nonfiction up to 2,000 words or a handful of poems just looking for a home, now is the time to consider submitting to the Jade Ring Contest. It's been running for 72 straight years, and there are always so many talented entries that come rolling in. So make your short piece of fiction, nonfiction, or your poetry part of their community by contributing it today. To learn more, you can visit wiwrite.org/contests. That's wiwrite.org/contests. And Avery, I don't know, maybe we can start here. Where do you fall where it pertains to this question? What are your thoughts on this one?
I kind of fall in the there are no truly original ideas camp, but in order for it to be considered a retelling, it has to lift some very specific things from an original, whether that's a theme, a premise, something that you can pinpoint to a specific other story.
Yeah, and that's, I think, a very fair, even-handed way to approach it. And my journey to asking this question before it even went out into the universe, my answer to this would have been more in line with what Sarah Smith has said, this idea that, well, totally. There are just original ways to execute ideas that are perhaps not as original as we might believe. And I even took it a couple of steps further and started thinking about plot structure and character development and, you know, all of these books that you can pick off your shelf that tell you, well, at this percentage point in a book, you should be having XYZ happen, whatever the case might be. But through comments like those of AA and then MA, I thought, yeah, but that's also if you're in the business of doing some really intense deconstruction. And at that point, I think we might be stepping too far away from the creative side of this and the ability to bask more in story. And when we get maybe too scientific about this once in a while, which I know I'm very guilty of, it can suck the fun out of the whole thing. So I was happy to be kind of reined in there by folks like MA and by AA, though I, of course, respect and probably still generally kind of embrace what it is Sarah had to say as well.
Yeah, I think it all depends on how far you're breaking down the story.
Right, because of course, if you are going to go ahead and start with the first, like we said earlier, and we'll quantify it because I'm in the business of trying to quantify things. If you're going to borrow the first 20% from a particular fairy tale and then kind of expand on it from there, sure, yeah, of course, you're doing a retelling for the first 20%, but then after that, well, that's all up to you. But then, at the same time, if you're following one of the traditional plot structure models or even just kind of letting the pen take you where it may and you still have that sort of overall arc in your character development and in the increase in tension in your plot, well, we could get super atomic and say again that it's a retelling of just the fundamental human experience of storytelling. But again, here we are sucking all the fun from it. So I don't know. I'm going to keep going in circles on this until someone drags me off the stage with a hook.
I do kind of feel that you can kind of chase your tail on this one a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. There is, I think, to some extent, in a lot of the conversations that happen on this show, I would say it's easy to start chasing your tail and then lose sight of where you started and get yourself a little dizzy. But in that experience, after you stop spinning, you see the world a little differently, and maybe it's a little wavy, but eventually from that, maybe there will come some clarity, or at least we hope. So I don't know. That was my take on it anyway. And MA did have one last comment here about the how and why retellings endure. And she says this: these stories endure because they draw on the most basic forms of story. We hear them when we're young, and they teach us about the shape of stories, how they rise and fall, and they usually have morals that are fun to play with or subvert. So a little column A, a little column B here coming across from MA, at least as it pertains to looking at structure. But I again appreciate that even-handedness, and I think there really is something to be said for what it is we can learn from retellings and fairy tales. And Avery, has that kind of been, was that your experience coming up with fairy tales and retellings, that it was what taught you so much about storytelling mechanics?
Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't even have to entirely be fairy tales. There can be other types of folklore mythology. So even things like the old Greek myths, kind of, you know, going back into that shape of stories, there are a lot of really enduring stories that over time just people have retold and retold in different ways. And they do kind of have that similar shape that you can play with.
And again, it's all about using that to, of course, entertain ourselves and, of course, learn about other cultures and learn about the history of humankind as it has evolved through its folklore and the stories that we tell ourselves, and they get passed on generation to generation. But we can learn something along the way too. So, you know, we're all winners in the end, right? But before we get into our questions from listeners for this episode, I do want to remind folks that, yes, the RightsCast Network is supported in part by listeners like you, and writers who support our programming financially at patreon.com/rightscast get access to some really cool patron perks like RightsCast Network swag, discounts on my editing services, and a fun new raffle for first 5-page critiques. You also get some early ad-free access to every episode, which I know is a big draw for people. And I've just added some new patron tiers and rewards over on the site as well. You can contribute at $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month, and every last bit counts. So again, that's patreon.com/rightscast.
Yes, and we'd especially like to thank Laura Hazen and Angeline Boley, whose contributions at the Wise Mentor level earn them shout-outs in every RightsCast Network episode, on top of all the other great patron rewards they receive.
So yes, thank you to Laura, thank you to Angeline. We appreciate that you visited patreon.com/rightscast, and now it's time to get into these listener questions. So we are thankful again for A.A. McConnell for joining us for our RightsCast chat for a number of reasons, but also because A.A. asked us a question in our RightsCast chat, and that question was this. Do you think it is possible to take a fairy tale and retell it as a completely different genre? Completely remove the romance or make it a quieter story than most fairy tales tend to be? Whatever the case is, Avery, let's start here. What do you think? Is it possible to take a fairy tale and retell it as a completely different genre?
I think absolutely. When I read this question, I had one example that came to mind. There's an anthology called In a Starlit Wood. And in it, Seanan McGuire has a story that is a retelling of the Little Red Riding Hood story, but as a gritty Western.
Oh, very cool. Like that.
And it's very well done. And it was the first example that came to mind with this is it plays with the loss of innocence and that as the theme of Little Red Riding Hood with a young girl character. And then those are really the only elements that were lifted. And the rest was turned into this kind of Western style story. So I think it just depends on how much you lift from the story and which elements you're playing with.
And I'm curious now, in that particular retelling, what did they do about the wolf who poses as the grandmother character? Do you remember? Because that's where I think there'd be some really interesting contrast in taking something away from a fairy tale and really embracing the Western side of it.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've read it. I was actually going to reread it, but we didn't have a lot of time between the Twitter chat and this episode. But if I remember correctly, the wolf is actually a human character who embodies the role that the wolf plays in the story. And if I remember correctly, I think it's actually kind of an after the story, like what happens after the story that we knew.
Interesting. So there you see it again. We're playing with timelines. We're playing with the very nature of the characters themselves, but we're still getting this thematic correlation. We're still getting something that takes what was a fairy tale originally and shifts it over, literally just drops it in a totally different genre, and we wind up in this really neat space. And that actually sounds fascinating to me, and I'm not someone who is normally drawn to retelling, so now you've got me hooked too. We're learning things today, and our tastes are changing and developing, right? So thank you so much, A.A. McConnell, for that, and Avery, thank you for that answer for A.A. I would have tended to agree with you, but I could not have come up with such a great example, so thank you, of course, for that. But as we start to wind down this conversation, we've answered our listener questions. We've had a chance to kind of explore a few different topics in the world of retellings. Let's maybe talk now what our main takeaways are from this conversation. And Avery, as someone who has more experience in the world of retellings, what are your biggest takeaways from a conversation like this insofar as good case practices or maybe not so good case practices for working on retellings might be?
Well, the good case, worst case practices, definitely what MA said about staying in your lane. It's really interesting to see these stories from other cultures, but I'd like to see them told by people from those cultures or that experience, because that just gives it the depth that's needed for that sort of story. And you want those authors to shine as well. also the I'm still kind of chasing my tail a little bit about the previous question, so I'm still kind of trying to sort those thoughts out a little bit.
And that's, again, that whole idea of whether all stories are retellings to some extent.
Yes.
Yeah, that's one that I think I will be kind of toying with and chasing my tail on from now until the end of time, because it kind of it ties into, I think, what one's approach maybe to actually writing is as well. If you are someone who is an outliner or a plotter, say, that is something that I can see you saying, well, yes, all stories are retellings to some point, and I can prove it, quote unquote, mathematically. But if you're someone who likes to write from maybe the seat of your pants, and I'm just, you know, this is all blind conjecture now, I have no data to back this up, you might be someone who says, no, there's more opportunity for fun and freedom, and you're getting too deconstructive with your analyses if you think that all stories are the same. And as someone, personally, who is going from being an outliner, a chronic outliner, just like I'm a chronic podcaster, to now trying to do more discovery writing and writing from the seat of my pants and actually enjoying myself quite a bit while doing it, I have to imagine that just as a pendulum swings back and forth, just as it is time for a change, musically, a cambiare, if you will, it is time for me to maybe embrace some change in my own writing path. So look at that. We're bringing it right back to your book as well.
Circling everything back around.
Circling it back around. We're chasing our tail, right? It never ends. So very good. We had some fantastic takeaways from this conversation. Thank you so much to everyone who contributed through our hashtag WritesCast chat on Instagram and on Twitter. We, of course, will continue to have opportunities for further engagement with our next episode of this show as well. Right now, as we are recording, there is a poll up on Twitter where people can help us choose our next episode topic. Those two topics are emotional wounds as motivation and new adult fiction. Right now, emotional wounds and motivation is winning, but there's a chance that, you know, new adult fiction could surge back to a comeback. So head on over to writescast.net after you've heard this episode air, and you'll be able to find out what people ended up voting on. And of course, there'll be an opportunity to talk about whatever that topic is going to be in another WritesCast chat, which will be on the 28th of April at 8 p.m. local time in Sydney, London, New York City, and Denver. So plenty of opportunities to participate in a chat there. And there will also be over on the @WritesCast handle on Instagram from April 24th through the 28th, daily prompts, if that's more your speed, which I think it is for some people. So thank you again to everyone for joining us for this episode of Novel Approaches here on the WritesCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the Wisconsin Writers Association. If you liked what you heard, and I know, I loved hearing your insight, Avery, I loved hearing insight from all of the folks in our WritesCast chat, but if you liked all of that, well, we'd love it if you could leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And for more writerly podcast content like this, visit WritesCast.net or follow us on Twitter @WritesCast. I'm also on Twitter as @AveryAmes. Come say hello.
And I am over on Twitter as @IamRRCampbell. And thanks again to everyone who participated in our WritesCast chat on Instagram and our WritesCast chat series on Twitter. Again, we're really grateful for all of those contributions. Without your insight, where would we be with this show? We'd just be chasing our tails, right? But someone needs to get us chasing them, and that's you, listeners. So thank you so much for being part of our WritesCast chats. And next up on the WritesCast Network, we will have an interview, in fact, of Jenny Nash, who is the founder of Author Accelerator and the author of Read Books All Day and Get Paid for It. So if you've ever been interested in becoming a freelance editor or book coach, or if you just want to grow your current freelancing business, this is the episode for you. So stay tuned for that one when it debuts on April 17th.
That's it for this episode of Novel Approaches. Thank you for listening.
Until next time, you know what to do. Write on and write well. This is the WritesCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the Wisconsin Writers Association, and always streaming at WritesCast.net.